Well, folks, you know you're in for a treat when you hear that tune, because it's time for another week of the Rec Poker Podcast. I'm your host, Jim Reed, Bluffsterini in the home game and at Rec Poker Jim on Twitter. And I have the best freaking job in the world, talking poker with my friends here on the Strategy Forums edition of the podcast every Monday night while we steal each other's chips in the free nightly home game. Now, I have to start by thanking our sponsors, the Running Aces Hotel, Racetrack, and Casino. You can find them just an hour north of the Twin Cities in the beautiful state of Minnesota. And you can find out more about what they've got going on at runaces.com. Now, they're really important because most of what we do here is free. We're a largely volunteer-based organization, so we depend on support from our sponsors and also from our premium members who take part in our training material and study opportunities for only $15 a month. That's a 1-5, folks, $15 a month. And if you like talking poker with your friends, I mean, join us for less than 50 cents a day. Come connect over Zoom with over fun, encouraging poker players, all trying to get better together, studying together, playing together, celebrating together, chatting and hanging out together. We're fun people who love poker, and you'd fit in real well here. So sign up for a free account at Rec Poker. All it takes is an email address and a smile, although we do insist on both. And if you want to take your game to the next level, you can join our premium membership for only $5 for your first month by using the code RECPOKER at checkout. Now, we got all that out of the way. They let me host the show on Mondays, but I'm only one man. It takes a group, a gang, a crew to make all the magic happen around here. We call this group of wizards the Wrecking Crew. And if you want to learn more about me or the rest of the Wrecking Crew, you can head to rec.poker/crew, or you can just listen up because you're going to meet a few of them right here tonight on the air, starting with producing co-host Chris Jones.
Well, I'm Chris Jones. You can find me 5b5 on Twitter or 5x5 in the Poker Stars home game, and I help run our monthly deep dive where we dig in on a poker strategy topic.
I'm Kim Kilroy. I'm PetBet33 on social platforms, Fergie56 in the home game. And I run a hand history review once a month when I can, and it's just like what you're going to see tonight.
And I'm Rob Washam, and I'm Rabman50 just about everywhere. And two times a month, on the first and third Wednesdays, we get together and discuss the latest book on poker. So join us.
I pulled a Somsky. I was muted there for a second. Rob's been running our book study for several years now, and we've gone through a lot of great poker books, and you can catch up on all the fun action in our archives and read along with Rob and his merry band of merry men and women. I don't know. Come join the book study. There's a lot of fun stuff going on there, and Rob's a boss when it comes to leading our group through some great poker books chapter by chapter. All right, that's enough of that. This is the forums edition of the podcast. So every week we are going to take a forum post from our free forums here at Rec Poker. Did I say free enough so far in this episode? Come join for free. And we're going to talk about it here on the air. This is a forum post by Eric Anderson, who goes by eAnderson85, a longtime member at Rec Poker and not an infrequent guest of the forums edition of the show himself. And it's about bet sizing on the final table. So I'll just introduce the hand. It gets to a very interesting river spot that we're going to break down a little later, but we'll go through the whole hand here. This is from a final table that Eric made. Congratulations, by the way, Eric. He knocked out fourth place to get the chip lead, and here we are. So we're three-handed. Eric has the chip lead, our correspondent, and he says, I'm interested in my play on every street, particularly bet sizing. I think the outcome would have been the same, but I feel like I didn't play optimal. I don't know. Maybe I should have gotten out of the pool somewhere. I heard the lifeguard blowing the whistle, but I didn't listen, says Eric. I love it. He says, let me know how you would have played it differently and how my opponent played. So we are in an ICM situation here. 67 people were paid, and we're down to the top three. And I'll just say third place was in for $248, second place for $340, and first place for $467. And we are three-handed. at the time that this hand takes place. So we are in the big blind here.
Can I add one thing too?
Yes, Chris, please jump in.
So, and importantly, we are the chip leader. The person who is in the small blind is very close to us, though. Like, we have 35 big blinds and they have 32. And then very of note is that the button is about half of each of our stacks at about 15.7 big blinds. I think that's kind of really important for some of the decisions we're going to be making.
Yeah, and when you get down to shorthanded play or ICM play, generally, I really want to reinforce to our audience that the one stat that matters most is stack size. Who covers who? Who's going to go out next? Who's going to feel some ICM pressure? Stack size is the most important factor. And so great point, Chris, for bringing that up. So yeah, so we have a slight chip lead on the second in chips. We only cover them by about two big blinds. And then the two of us cover the third place player who has about half as much as the two of us. So great call out on the dynamic there. So we're in the big blind. We're dealt the jack six offsuit. The button position folds and the small blind just limps in. So they just call and we check behind. Does anyone want to advocate for a raise or for just folding for no reason when you could check? Yeah, I didn't think so. So pretty uncontroversial pre-flop play, Eric. Full mark so far, checking behind. The flop comes jack, king, king, and the small blind player checks to us. The pot has about 2.37 big blinds in it, and we can check or bet. Who likes a check? Who likes a bet? And why? We'll just see who unmutes first. And doesn't look like we're getting.
I think it's not up to us though. It's up to the small blind first.
Yeah, I didn't read that that way. Did you read it that the small blind check we bet and they called, or did you read? I read it that the small blind bet and that we called that bet.
Oh, I'm looking at the white image that Eric posted as a reply. Let me just take a look here. We do a lot of these.
Oh yeah, I didn't see this.
Yeah.
Because I was looking at the other imagery. It was hard to kind of tell what the action was. Okay, this is
helpful. Should we pause? Should we just keep going?
Nope.
Okay. All right, excellent. We're pulling the curtain back here. And I do tell our audience, this is what happens. Like what you get here with the forum position of the podcast is some serious recreational players and how they would first respond to a forum post here at the Rec Poker Forums. So, yeah, I read it as a check from the small blind. We make about a half pot size bet, or a little more than that maybe, and get called. Does that scan for everybody else?
Yep.
Yep.
And this is a value bet. I'd be betting here too. We've got, you know, the second pair on a pair board. There are bad cards out there. We can get called by worse. I think this is a pretty uncontroversial bet. And we'd be betting with a bunch of bluffs here too if they checked to us. This is a hard board to hit. So we bet they do call. The turn is the queen of spades. So the board is jack of diamonds, king of clubs, king of spades, queen of spades. There's 5.5 big blinds in the pot. The small blind checks. And then we bet again, smaller this time relative to the pot. It's about the same size bet, but the pot's bigger. And we get called by the small blind again. Any thoughts so far on sizing? Are we going to nitpick on sizing? Are either of these check behind spots? Typically, you kind of see people size up a little bit on the turn. What do you think of Eric's choosing a smaller bet proportional to the pot?
I mean, I prefer a check back on the turn, especially when another overcard comes. And also, we don't have a great kicker for our jack, so we could easily be beat kicker-wise. I don't know. We'll see what the solver says later, but that's what we're in ICM, so I just prefer the check back here.
Rob? Actually, the turn takes away our kicker issue because the queen, king, king, jack is going to be the hand. So the kicker doesn't play at all at this point.
Good point.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think in ICM situations, what we've always talked about and we've always discussed was that you want to keep your bet sizing small. If you would normally make a big bet, you make a small bet. And if you'd normally make a small bet, you probably check. So I don't know that, maybe a check back on the flop would have been better. And then let our opponent try to bluff into us on the turn and then call that bet. But so be it. I think he kept it small, and I think that's what you need to do in these ICM spots. You don't want to bloat the pot.
Chris?
Yeah, and I guess I think I prefer a check back here too. I like the flop bet because we do have the chip advantage over this player. So they have to be worried about us as much as we're worried about them, and we can put more pressure on them. So it allows us to bet more. I like the small bet there. Once they call and this card comes, we don't want to get a lot of chips in here. We've got an okay hand that can withstand a decent amount. And yes, they can have like a open ender. I mean, they could have a 10 or something. This queen's kind of ugly for that. And there's some ways in which they're going to, but like, it's okay. We have a jack. We have jack six, right? And this is a small pot anyway. I'm just checking this back on this turn before we get to sort of the mess of this river.
Yeah.
I just think there's no reason, especially in these ICM situations, we're in such a good position. We've got the chip lead. There's this person on the button who's supposed to go out next. They have half the chips of both of us. Let's let this play out. This is not the situation we want to start getting a lot of chips in.
So we just want to try and get our jack to showdown right now.
Yeah.
When we're on the turn. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I do, I have two thoughts. I will say the small bet, originally, I was thinking I'd rather do a bigger bet or a check back. The good thing about the small bet is that maybe you can get called by a hand like ace high, because you're really, it's hard to find a value target here for a second best hand that's going to call you. But maybe with a small enough bet, you can get called by some of those hands, ace high or pocket tens or something like that. So I will say that. The other thing is, when we bet the flop, we really wanted them to fold a lot. When they don't, they're continuing with a smaller set of hands than they had. Those are going to be hands that had a marginal amount of made hand value or some draw value. This queen on the turn is a bad event. This is not one of the cards we wanted to see. We would have paid money to see any card 10 or lower in the entire deck. And what did they give us? A freaking queen. So sometimes we're tempted, all of us, to, in a spot like this, be like, oh, well, that makes it even more drawy than it was. I really should put a bet out and charge people. But the fact is, the bad event has already occurred. So you don't have to just stop firing every time the bad event occurs. But, this is just not a good card for us. And that's a good time to think about maybe taking your hand off the trigger, taking your finger off the trigger, because now, like Kim says, maybe we can just get this jack to showdown when a card that's come that's not only an overcard for our hand, our pair, but also really favors the range of the calling player on the flop. Chris, did you have something to add to that?
No, I just agree.
I think, too, when you're talking about your value targets, when you were talking about those just now, I think our value, if they had an ace or pocket tens, I think we probably would have seen more chips go in pre-flop, perhaps, than just them limping in. So it's hard to put those in the range that we're trying to get called by that we're beating.
Yeah, fantastic point.
I agree. I agree with that 100%. That's the one factor that, as I was reading through his comments, most of the hands that you're worried about right now, from that standpoint, would have raised preflop.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have to put him on. I mean, he's going to be calling 50% of the time from the small blind with all kinds of crap. So now that he's called, though, on the flop, we can start narrowing that crap down. But it's still crap, you know, no matter what. It's not a big, you know, it's not aces. It's not kings. It's not queens. It's still crap.
But it's yep. very heavy in King X. Like,
yes.
This is one of the things I think sometimes paired boards, when we're in normal range land and somebody's like open from the hijack and we get to a, like, they don't have that many kings to begin with. So when the king pairs, you're like, well, you're just less likely to have a king. But when we're talking about a small blind completing, they have every king, not every mm-hmm. king, but they have every bad king, right? I mean, they probably mm-hmm. are King Deuce is coming in here, I think, as a complete all the way on up to yep. maybe King 10. You know, maybe they raise King Jack. I don't know, but like something in there. And that's a lot of kings, actually, when you start doing the math of that. So yeah. it's something we have to be really cognizant of when we're thinking about this spot.
Yeah, I think even in a big blind calling range against a in position open, you don't see as many kings as you're going to see here.
Right.
Right.
Because every single offsuit king is in his range right now, mm-hmm. not just the suited kings. Yep. So, yeah. That's a heck of a lot.
He can also have a lot of queens in his range as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Oh, for sure.
Yeah, he's got all those too.
And they beat us too. Yeah, yeah. So that's not
And fair. They're ahead of us right now also.
Yeah. And a lot of those Queen X hands would be in the flop calling range because they've got, you know, a gutshot or backdoor. Yeah, yeah, yep. yeah, exactly. Yep. So when we look at this, so we do make the bet on the turn and we get called and we're looking for the river, but I think the board is Jack of Diamonds, King of Clubs, King of Spades, Queen of Spades. There could be some weird non-value hands that they have here. They could have backed into a spade draw, you know. They could have called now that they've picked up a flush draw. They could have a hand like they could have a jack, like they have a hand with a Jack of Spades. They could have a hand with like a 10 that's now.
We have the Jack of Spades.
Oh, yeah, we have the Jack of Spades. Okay. So, okay. Well, we're running out of draws for them here, but they could have like a 10 of Spades.
I mean, they could have like, I don't know. It is hard. I mean,
not a lot. Like,
I mean, maybe they've got, are they raising every suited ace? Maybe some suited aces are. Sure.
The baby suited aces are gonna
they got like ace three of spades or something in there.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. That would call the flop and call the turn. But there's not a lot. And as we pointed out, they have a ton of kings, even with the card removal of seeing two of them already, and they have a ton of queens. And those would have continued through these actions. So I guess my question is, what's a good river now for us? Like, what is a good river? If we're behind, it's going to be very hard for us to improve unless we hit exactly a jack. A six doesn't help because we'll be counterfeit. And all the low cards, again, like, it's not, it doesn't really help. Doesn't
I don't mind a lot seeing of a king.
Yeah, I was just going to say, a king right. Might be the best card we could possibly see.
Yep, great point. Because we're already behind him if he's got a king. And this would just make it less likely that that is the case. So that makes sense.
I guess you beat by all the queens.
You still get beat by all the queens. It's true. It's true. So this stinks. This is just a bad run. And all we've done, it's amazing. Like, listen to how strongly we're talking about the difference in strength of the two players' ranges here. All this happened is that the turns come and a small bet has been made and called. But if you look into the range construction, if you think about the incentives of the players and why they're the hands they'd be making these hands, these actions with, it's not looking good for our correspondent. So we get to the river and it's the jack. We made a jack. So everyone's, you know, you're pretty excited, right? I mean, hey, come on. We got the loser end of a full house coming. What could be better?
What could go wrong?
What could possibly go wrong? And again, so I'll just set the scene here. So the board is jack, king, king, queen, jack. We're three-handed, and we have the chip lead. Our small blind leads into us for a little over half pot. The river's got, the pot's about a little over nine big blinds right now. They lead out for five. I think
alarm bells.
Yes. So, and think about that. Like, we've got a jack, so there's not that many jacks out there. Any king is beating us. Any queen is beating us.
No.
Queen's not beating us.
Which is great. This card has helped us beat all the queens.
Great.
So that is that's a good development.
Now I don't know if they're leading five big blinds into nine.
No,
but there's a really good way to find out.
Hold on. The other thing, they could be doing this. We said maybe with a busted flush draw is the only other real hand that they could have here. And that's not going to be happening very often at all. So I think we could fold here and just not know if they were pulling a move on us or not. But we've given no indication of weakness. Like, we're not inviting bluffs here. Or we could call and see if they had a king or another jack. You know, they could have a jack this way too. A jack probably plays this similarly. So I like Eric Anderson, and Eric is a smart poker player, but I think he makes a big boo-boo here because Eric chooses to raise. And I think he's just thinking about the absolute value of his hand. He's thinking that it's not likely that their opponent has a king. And those are correct. They're just not the whole story here. And what ends up happening is small blind bets five. Eric raises to 11 and a bit. The small blind then re-raises all in. And Eric, covering this player, calls. I think that's a mistake. I think this, you'd have to have some crazy notes on this player to think that there was some maniac who was getting out of line on the lead, but certainly on the re-raise here. And especially when you've got the chip lead. I mean, you won't at the end of this hand, even if you just call or fold on the river. But you've still got plenty of chips. You're in position on this player. Folding here, the downside is a lot higher than the downside to taking this raise line here. Chris, you unmuted first. Or what are your thoughts?
I think you summarized this well. We don't know that we're going to be behind. I mean... calling here, I think you're right. There can be some weird busted flush draws. There can be some queens maybe that are being overplayed by our opponent. We've hit kind of the best card that we could possibly hit after we've been going through with this jack. The bet's not that big. We still have a bigger stack than the button if we call and are wrong here. It's a half pot bet. We don't have to be right that often. We might be chopping sometimes, but I'm just flicking the chips in. But we just, especially in ICM land, like if this was like the level one of the tournament, I still don't think you can ever do this. But in this situation, you just cannot do this. You cannot do this. You've got to just find a call because the moment we, and if you do,
sorry,
if you do, you have to go into raise fold mode. Like, okay, I'm trying to milk. I guess our target is I'm trying to milk more out of a queen. And I think that this player is maybe call happy or they can't get away. And they're going to, so I'm going to min click it and they're going to call me and I'm going to get those extra chips. I still don't think that's a good idea. But if that is our plan, great. Okay, try it. But the moment they commit all their chips, you got to be running for the hills. You have to fold this. Have to fold it.
Yep, I agree. Rob, jump in.
I don't understand the raise. I do not understand the raise. Because if he's bluffing, or if you have him beat, he's never going to call that raise. The only thing that's going to call that raise is a hand that beats you, right? So if you think he's bluffing or he's doing this with some queen and you raise him, he's never calling with a queen. He's only calling with a king or another jack that you're going to chop with. So I think the raise is a mistake. Calling would not be a mistake here. Calling the lead of five big blinds is not a mistake. Go ahead and call that off because you've got, and Keith Brandt responded to this post saying, what you now have is a bluff catcher. You have the bottom full house in a paired board, a double paired board. You've got a bluff catcher. Just try to catch the bluff. And even if you, and when you do lose, you still have a whole ton of chips and a lot of your ICM, a lot of your equity is still there. I mean, by what he did here, he lost $109 of equity that he had when he started that hand. From when he started that hand till he ended that hand, he lost $109 of equity. So ICM means equity, right? This is your equity in this tournament. This is the money that you've already earned in this tournament based on your chip stack and the payouts. So you can't just blindly shove everything in there. There's a thing that we're talking about right now in the exploitative play in live poker, where people get to this decision point where they really don't know what to do. And so they jam it in, not thinking that, well, the only thing that's going to really call me is something that beats me. And when they jam it in, they just think, well, everybody's going to fold because I'm showing so much strength.
Yeah, it's true. So hats off to Eric. I really like the way Eric studies poker and thinks about poker. He shares a lot of really interesting hands in the forums here, and he breaks them down really well and provides some really good graphics and resources as well. So I think, you know, Eric knows that he misplayed this hand, which is why he's putting it in here. And we do think that he misplayed the river. But we were talking about this before we got started, and Chris and Kim and Rob wanted to pull out some to go deep into a solver and kind of find some of the other possibilities for how this could have gone. Who wants to unmute first and kind of jump into a bit of a revision of the river? Chris, share with us.
Well, I'll just, I mean, it just, I mean, I ran this through and we looked at, you know, basically this whole run out. And when small blind takes this action and you look at what our action is in the big blind, we just don't find a lot of bluff raises at all, and certainly don't find it with our jacks. We were talking a little, I misunderstood, like I told you at the beginning, I misunderstood the action, so I had rerun this while we were talking. And there are a few like terrible hands. Like, we have a few, like, really bad spade draws that we might find this raise with, along with our kings. But none of our jacks take this raise line. Like, it's just a 100% call with those. Because, as Rob was pointing out, there's no benefit to raising with a jack. There's some benefit to raising with those really god-awful spades. You know, you could start to wonder about that, but I mean, we're going to be able to beat some hands, if they fold, that, that probably have us in, you know, in a lot of trouble. I mean, they're talking about hands like 10 deuce of spades, right? That's what I'm hands like that, that somehow get to this point, maybe like that's a type of hand that we could potentially turn into a few of these bluffs to combine with all of our kings.
And, you know, we get attracted to having balanced ranges and having bluff combos and showing up with, you know, surprising holdings in various spots like this. But part of that comes down to how many hands we can raise for value. You kind of want to marry the combos of bluffs proportionally to the number of combos of value hands that you're raising. If you're in a spot like this where you actually can't raise for value without a king in your hand, that's also going to limit the opportunities that you have to bluff. And so you won't need to, you know, turn some of these unconventional hands into bluff candidates as well. So a really interesting spot. I think Monkey System, our man Keith Brandt, really hit the nail on the head, which said that just regardless of the strength of the hand, this is a bluff catcher. And what do we do with bluff catchers? We call against bluffers and we fold against everyone else. And just take the raise option right out of the equation, because that's not what you do with bluff catchers. Those bluff catchers are in that middle of the range where we want to catch bluffs. We can bluff ourselves with much worse hands, and we can value bet with better hands. So this, I think, just plays better as a call or even a fold, you know, depending on the player. But I probably call here in real time. Rob?
Yeah. Another thing, when you're looking at the poker tracker stats on this particular villain, he's 21-15. Now I can't read how many hands that he's got on this guy, but 21-15 is a pretty solid player.
Mm-hmm.
He's not getting out of line. He's not doing anything really crazy or stupid. His stats look pretty, pretty solid. So he's going to be a very solid player. So again, if he's bluffing, you call because you have a bluff catcher. That's it. If you raise, the only thing that's calling you is going to be beating you. This guy is playing very solid poker. So call on the river, call, be done with it.
And, also, shout out to 7High11, John Crowell, who's put another really good response in here that really runs down a lot of the stuff that the panel and I were just talking about here on the show. So thanks, John, for sharing that along with Keith Brandt. And thanks to Eric Anderson for posting another fantastic hand in the forums. Even just little nitpicky stuff, little bet sizing questions like this, you never know what you're going to find on a Rec Poker rabbit hole that we're going to wander down. So thanks for posting. Keep posting, Eric. Thanks for your support and keep being a fantastic part of the Rec Poker membership here. Well, gang, I want to say thank you to, Eric Anderson, to the Running Aces Hotel, Racetrack, and Casino. We couldn't do what we do without them. I want to thank Rob Washam, Kim Kilroy, and Chris Jones for their continued support through the Wrecking Crew and some excellent insights tonight. And you, the audience, we couldn't do it without your support at home. So keep it up, folks, and we'll see you on another week of the Rec Poker Podcast.